Hello and welcome back to the Bentley Priory Museum podcast. My name is Alex and I'm joined today by Tim.
Hi, Alex.
Hi, Tim. We will be continuing with the theme of the Blitz to tie into the contemporary exhibition at Bentley Priory Museum, Memoirs of the Blitz. This episode is called Life Under Shelter Part 2. Today we will be looking into the way the Blitz affected the United Kingdom on a wider scale, and how sheltering was taking place in affected towns and cities. So Tim, I'll hand over to you. Can you tell us how the Blitz started to become a wider spread issue across the United Kingdom?
Yeah, thanks Alex. Just a reminder, if any is needed, that the Blitz is regarded as having occurred between sort of the 7th of September 1940 and the 9th of the 10th, 11th of May 1941. And recognise that that's a really sustained period of bombing. It's important to recognise that whilst London was an important German target during the Blitz, many other cities and towns across the United Kingdom were also targeted during this period and suffered badly at the hands of German bombers. So many places were attacked, and so many on more than one occasion. It seems invidious to single out particular places, as it implies that the suffering in other places is somehow less important. It is important, though, to give a sense of the scope of suffering inflicted. And in our conversation looking at the Blitz, we'll use examples to illustrate that scope based on major attacks. In doing that, it's got to be recognised that these raids weren't happening in isolation. The city itself that we're talking about may have been the subject of a series of attacks, and on any one night, other towns and cities would be hit more or less badly. So to try and give some kind of idea of the scope of what was happening, in a previous podcast, we talked about the infamous raid on the city of Coventry on the night of the 14th, 15th of November, 1940. Devastating raid, lots of casualties, lots of damage in the centre and around the city. The targets ostensibly being manufacturing sites, important manufacturing sites in and around Coventry. If we move to the 22nd, 23rd of November, 1940, Birmingham was hit, and there are reports there that the fires in Birmingham were visible from aircraft over England's south coast, and indeed fire services were drafted into Birmingham from as far away as Cardiff. A few nights later, 28th, 29th of November 1940, Liverpool and Merseyside area hit, targeted by over 300 bombers. The city sustained the most damage. Dock area, which was obviously one of the targets, was relatively unscathed. I think, Alex, you were talking to someone who was around in Liverpool at that time?
Yes, that's correct. So, I spoke to someone called Robert. Now, although he was actually born in 1940, you know, he still has vivid memories of, you know, from that time and onwards, and I think that really shows how these kind of attacks were affecting children at the time, even at such a young age. He spoke about how he was born in an air raid shelter in Southport. He said that, you know, obviously what would happen is the bombers would go over Liverpool, do what they had to do, and then on the way out, if they had any air bombs left, you know, they would drop them on the sort of wider Merseyside area. So that's why he was born in an air raid shelter. But then he later moved on to Salford, and this was in the early 1942 time. So after the Blitz, but obviously, you know, the bombing and raids were still happening. And he was just 2 years old, and he spoke of this vivid memory he had. Some incendiaries were dropped on his street, on the church opposite his house, and also his house itself was hit. And he remembers his mother having to carry him down the stairs through this wall of fire. Luckily, you know, he said that she was not hurt, but, you know, she was a bit singed from it. But that memory of that fire, you know, really stayed in his mind, even at 2 years old. And he said that, you know, the church was so alight, it was just like a massive candlestick. So that kind of really starts to put in perspective, you know, the lasting effects and trauma that these raids had on even the youngest people.
Yeah, it's a terrible and interesting recollection. And, you know, these things really imprint. Many of the people you spoke to were children at the time, and it's incredible to see that kind of indelible imprint on their minds of their experiences then. Your witness, if you like, was in Manchester. It was in Salford, rather, at the time. 22nd, 23rd of December, 1940, Manchester City was hit, particularly large number of incendiary bombs dropped. So again, that sort of reflects his experience and his memory of fire, actually, as part of the raids. A couple of weeks before that, 12th, 13th of December, 1940, Sheffield was hit badly. Its status as a steel city drew the Germans' attention. And again, the city centre being particularly badly hit. We talked earlier on regarding the raid on Birmingham about fire services being drawn from as far away as Cardiff. And on the 2nd or 3rd of January 1941, Cardiff itself was hit in a raid aimed at docks and steelworks in the city. Whilst bombs fell quite widely across most areas of the city, no great damage was caused to the docks. Further north, 13th, 14th of March 1941, Glasgow and Clydebank areas in the west and northwest of the city and the riverside areas of Clydebank were badly damaged in a major bombing raid. Many ports around the UK were hit, including Southampton on 20th, 21st of March 1941. Plymouth was the target of a major raid. Again, the centre of the city being particularly badly affected. And again, Alex, I think you had someone who recalls incidents around Southampton at the time.
Yes, absolutely. So I spoke to someone called Who. Now, Who actually started off, he was living in London. He experienced the first part of the Blitz there and then later moved to Southampton. I believe he had some family down that way, so they moved there to kind of try and get away from London, I guess. But obviously, as you've mentioned, Tim, the port cities were also being attacked as well. And he had a very vivid recollection of, he was 7 years old at the time, and one night there was a big raid happening, and as a consequence of that, you know, there was lots of aerial battles, and the AA guns are shooting down planes. They went out, him and his friends, to see where they had noticed a plane, a German fighter had come down. And they were, you know, searching through the wreckage, as you do as a child of 7 years old, and come across a boot. Now, the boot still had a human foot in it. So, again, to kind of put this into perspective, you had children that at any point in their life should not be experiencing things like that. I mean, even as adults, I don't think we should be. But, you know, as a child, to come across something like that, you know, it leaves such a lasting impact of trauma. And, you know, I think for me, the most interesting thing is, you know, he spoke about it as if it's nothing. It's, oh, yeah, it's just a foot in a boot. And I think as a child, you know, you're quite naive to that kind of thing and you don't really overthink it. But, you know, the older you get, it's still there in your mind. It's imprinted there. And, you know, I think what happened is a lot of these children that experienced these things didn't really register it as trauma, because at the time, as he spoke about, you know, it's kind of this stiff upper lip kind of attitude, and you know, you just get on with it because that's what was happening at the time. But in reality, you know, it did have a lasting impact on them, and whether, you know, they recognize that as trauma today or not is a different matter, but you know, it clearly is what it is.
Some of those stories were incredible, really, and I think that's, for me, one of the highlights, if you like, of your exhibition, Memoirs of the Blitz, that, you know, much of the stories have been told over the past, 80 years, from a perspective, the adult's perspective, and a kind of analytical perspective about what happened. And your exhibition, of necessity, in a sense, because the, you know, the majority of survivors that you could speak to were children at the time. It's been fascinating for me in terms of the kind of interviews that you did, getting that child's perspective on what was happening. It's quite naive level, if you like, at the time. But perhaps what's been most fascinating for me has been, there's some quite moving testimonies in there that are as much about the long-term impact on the rest of their lives, about, you know, changes in circumstance or particular relationships or particular experiences, that kind of project the impact and the story of the Blitz way forward, way beyond 1940-41. And the impact that experiences like that can have rippling out through the whole of a person's life.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that's the thing, you know, you can read history books, but there's something about just talking to someone, you know, face to face, that a lot of them hadn't really spoken about this before. And, you know, it's kind of just this, how do I describe it? Almost like this raw kind of feeling, you know, it's just, it is what it is. And, you know, there's no kind of sense of biasness about it. You know, they just lived through this experience and they wanted to talk about it, basically. And, you know, for a lot of them, I think it was quite a liberating time for them to actually get it off their chest and say, yeah, okay, this did happen, and kind of recognize that. So, yeah, I think that's important.
Yeah, let's wrap up the illustration of the scope of the attacks that were taking place, Alex. We move to the 15th, 16th of April, 1941. Belfast, bombing by around 180 aircraft, killed over 300 people and rendered 20,000 people homeless. 25th, 26th of April, 1941. You know, major attack, Newcastle Tyneside area, where the target was actually Sunderland. The 8th and 9th of May 1941, finally, as an example, Hull, the port city of Hull, over 400 killed in one night and 30,000 people made homeless. So, you know, it's been good to have this conversation, actually, because my fear was that we'd simply reel off a list of examples of the kind of effect that attacks were having. But I think being able to have the conversation and interjecting the your recollection, if you like, of the accounts of people who experienced it helps make that admittedly simply illustrative account of the bombing across the United Kingdom during that September 1940 to April 1941 period more meaningful and more human.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And just to pick up on, you know, the attack you mentioned on Hull, thinking of attacks on the East Coast, I also spoke to a chap called Don. He lived in Great Yarmouth, so he's in Norfolk area. And he spoke also about how, you know, there was a lot of attacks happening on Great Yarmouth. He mentioned in particular, there was a couple of attacks. There was one where an incendiary hit the next door neighbor's house and set their attic on fire. At the time, they were out, they were sheltering, but well, the people that lived in this house, but Don and his family were still at home. So yeah, he spoke of that, and he's, you know, interesting again to think back to the childlike perspective. He had a younger sister, and they were outside, and you know, there were all these embers flying around from the burning wooden beams, and he recalled how his sister was saying, "Oh, look, all those birds," you know, and it kind of just, you know, that kind of underpins that naivety again. And, you know, that must be a memory that stayed with her moving forward also, this kind of looking up into the night sky, but at the same time seeing all these burning orange embers sort of flying around. It, in a way, almost sounds quite fairy tale like to a child, but, you know, the reality is the house next door to them was burning down. And then he also spoke about how a church and a brewery got bombed on the same night, and he had this sort of funny little anecdote, whether how true it was or not to the extent, but, you know, he spoke of how you know, the farmer would they rushed to the brewery to put that out before the church. Now, whether that's true or not, I mean, I can quite imagine actually that being a situation that could unfold. But it just kind of, you know, puts into perspective, I guess, how so many buildings were being hit. You know, you had churches, and similarly, like Robert, at the start that I spoke about, you know, places of worship were being hit and destroyed, which, you know, obviously that's somewhere that, as a community, people would have been going to, and it's a place for them to kind of maybe even reflect on what was happening. But, you know, those places were being taken from them. And then, you know, the brewery, for instance, you know, maybe that was keeping people going throughout them times. But, you know, again, it's infrastructure being hit. And yeah, I think that just sort of illustrates the importance of that. So yeah, I think that kind of wraps that up. I don't know if there's anything else you want to talk about, Tim.
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting, the things that people kind of recall, and these tales that again kind of trickle down through the age. I mean, that last account reminds me of a scene in a famous 1960s film where people sheltering, some of whom have been bombed out, and there's an older gentleman wandering around in a daze, telling people that basically the only thing he was talking about was his local pub had been hit. You know, I don't know, the Rose and Crown's gone. And, you know, it's kind of, in one way, funny to laugh at these things. But, you know, one of the objects of the bombing was to impact on people's morale, and morale can be impacted on not just directly by bombs falling on and around you, but the consequent impact on your life, and, you know, somewhere to go to relax that you've been going since you were a teenager, when you're in your 60s and 70s, suddenly not being there is perhaps going to affect your morale. So yeah, it's though they're kind of funny stories, they were real lives being affected, and people's patterns of life being affected day after day, night after night sometimes, familiar places disappearing, familiar things disappearing, people disappearing, as horrible as that sounds. Yeah. It's very sobering to look back on.
Yeah, absolutely. And just thinking about this, you know, you're saying about people disappearing, something come back into my mind about Don with his interview. And he spoke about, I'm assuming this must have been after the Blitz, but, you know, it still puts into perspective how, you know, this bombing was going on. And he was talking about when the V1s and V2 bombs were coming over, and He said he had been to school in the morning, went home at lunchtime, and this other boy went home at lunchtime. He went back to school after lunchtime, and in that time, this other boy, had been hit in an attack, and I think that shows just how quickly things can change, and how it affected people. So just in that time, just in a school lunchtime, and someone's life, or I'm assuming lives of people, just vanished just like that. So it's kind of a bit more of a depressing take on it maybe, but that's the reality of what was happening. And Tim, I believe you have some historical background about trekking.
An interesting phrase, isn't it? We've talked
Yes.
previously about shelter provision, the provision of air raid shelters in different forms, and people's reaction to sheltering. The sustained bombing campaign actually gave rise to another response, which went eventually under the grand name of trekking, which became a feature in cities like London, Hull, Portsmouth, and Southampton. And this was where numbers of people moved out of the cities at night, away from the bombing. In London, that initially took the form of the movement of people from the East End to the West End, where it was perceived as being less affected by the bombing. Using Coventry as an example, trekking out of the city to sleep in the countryside or neighbouring towns and villages has started even before that major raid on the city of the 14th and 15th of November. And it's believed to have helped reduce the potential loss of life, devastating though the actual loss was. And there was some controversy about trekking at the time. Did it indicate, we were talking earlier about morale, did it indicate that morale was breaking or broken? What did it say about the people who were trekking? And there was a study actually undertaken by the scientist Solly Zuckerman on the effects on civilians of bombing campaigns. He came to the conclusion that though trekking had been much publicized as indicators of the breaking down of morale, and I'm going to quote something here, but he said instead it should be fairly recognized as a considered response to the situation. And that's a kind of contemporary analysis. So, a fair response, move away from the danger when the danger is likely to present itself. Just as an aside, in Belfast, trekkers went by another name, ditchers, as some residents sought refuge in fields around the cities. So it was a fairly common response to the threat presented by air raids, and needs to be seen perhaps alongside the sheltering policies of the time.
Okay, that's great, Tim. I think that brings us to the end of our conversation now about sheltering and also now trekking, something that I didn't know prior to this, which shows I still have a lot of people that I could and should talk to about the Blitz. Or maybe as children they didn't partake in trekking. Maybe that's what it was. So next episode, we will be looking at the changing landscape of the United Kingdom due to the bombing, but also on a light-hearted note and a bit more of a fun aspect of the Blitz as a child. The next episode will be called Playing with Fire. We will be looking at how children responded to this changing landscape and used areas such as bombed-out houses and bomb craters as places of play and how they adapted to the environment around them. Also, if you have memories yourself of playing in bombed out houses, bomb craters, as a consequence after the Blitz as you were growing up, maybe you would be interested in sending across a message that we could speak about in the next podcast episode and share your memories of these times also. So thank you for listening. And of course, if you haven't been to see Memoirs of the Blitz yet, it's still on at Bentley Priory Museum until the 14th of December. So yeah, please do go if you haven't been already. So until next time, thank you for listening and goodbye.
Bye.